I ever knew, but I didn't know for a long time what it was. My mother used to go to what they called Cahilla meetings, and I didn't know that they were, Cahilla meant organization committee meeting. There was the need for children's home. Then eventually they started the home for the aged. And every year there was a major event. Now here you have the annual dinner, Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged. But there was an annual community function that took place at Town Hall, and for all of the Jewish families. Everybody came with children and all. It was the top event of the year when they celebrated, it was usually around Hanukkah time, what had been accomplished in the various organizations, and they would bring top entertainment in. And this was the big event. And the admission charge went to their various charities.
That was the next point that I wanted to get to, was the life of the community, the Jewish community in which you lived in.
The Jewish
started with that, with the Y, yeah, and so forth.
The Jewish community, as I said, for the most part, moved around the Y. The social clubs were around the Y. I remember that there was a club called the 7200 Club. And every year they had a big formal dance. They were always based, all the clubs were based on some charitable endeavor.
And why was it called the 7200? Do you know?
I really don't know. I mean, I didn't know it was that funny, so it escapes me now. But I'll never forget that my father, as the president of the Y, and my mother had to lead the grand march. And I will never forget the excitement around the social events that went there.
Was your grandmother educated in New York?
Yes, in New York. In New York. All of the children then went to school in New York.
Mm-hmm. Now,
you were educated in Scranton?
I was in Scranton through my first year of college. And then, of course, you had depression years, and there were five of us, and we were very close. There had been a very sad occurrence. We were just before we were having to have dinner on a Friday night, and I heard a knock at the back door of our home. And at this time, my father's sister, Hannah, and her husband lived in the house next to us. And when my grandfather retired, he and my uncle were the only ones in the family at home. They had brought, at the time my grandmother became ill, they had brought a girl in from Hungary who became, she was about 18 or 19, and she became their cook. And Molly was with them for many, many years, and then Grandpa arranged a marriage for her, so that they were then alone. So they went to live with my Aunt Hannah, and they had redone the house so that there was an apartment, like a bachelor's apartment, for Uncle Harry and Grandpa. But they had their meals with Aunt Hannah. They lived right next door to us, and we grew up as one family, her two children and our family. Came this knock at the back door, and my grandfather was out on the porch, I remember that, just ready to go to services on Friday night. And I looked at, and there was man that I knew well, Mike. He was one of the truck drivers for the wholesale grocery. And he said, they always called me Mickey because I had short, cropped blonde hair and freckles. So he said, Mickey, where your papa? And I realized that Mike had been drinking. And I said, Mike, you better go away. If my father sees you, he's going to be very angry. He said, I must see him. The story was that Mike had come in off the road after delivering and gotten a bottle and went into the warehouse there and curled up on some of the sacks and decided he was going to sleep it off. And he heard sounds. And the sum and substance of the whole thing was that one of the sons had a fellow by the name of Ettinger in the building negotiating the sale of the building. Now this is what happened. When they went into this business, my grandfather bought that building for $24,000. He said, way back. After they had given up and just the four men were in the business, Thoreau Greenberg came to my grandfather and he said, look, Max, you have so much property. I don't own a major piece of property. Why don't you sell the building to me? Let me own this building. So my grandfather said, oh, it's silly. He said, look, you pay $24,000 for it, I know, I'll give you $25,000, no big deal, years later. Now, it so happened that they bought this building alongside of a siding, a railroad siding, so that they could unload carloads of stuff. On the other side of the siding was a furniture store. The Ettinger Furniture Company. And the Greenbergs knew that they wanted additional space. And they could have built a run across from one building to the other, you know, to take down. And they were negotiating for the sale of that building to the Ettingers, predicated on my grandfather's selling the business to them. And they were going to get $90,000 for the building. And he was trying to buy it from my grandfather for $25,000. And Mike overheard the conversation. He didn't let Abe Greenberg see him, but he came right to see my father. My father discussed it with my grandfather. And Monday morning, Grandpa, my father, and Uncle Harry had arranged an appointment with the two Greenberg sons and Thoreau Greenberg. And Grandpa walked into the office. I remember my father relating the story. And he said to him, Thoreau, I want to ask you a question, and I want a yes or no answer. Are you negotiating for the sale of this building to the Ettinger Furniture Company for $90,000? And, of course, Dan turned all colors. And he had always had a very bitter feeling about my family because he had been engaged to my Aunt Hannah. It was something that the
was
family...
Was it Greenberg or Greenberg?
Greenberg. Greenberg. And she was a very shrewd... Oh, she was smart as all could be. They were engaged and she realized this had been a trumped up family thing and that he was not for her. And she threw the ring at him one day and it was all over. And of course, he couldn't take that. In any event, Greenberg admitted that, yes, that there was such a deal if my grandfather was going to sell the building, but it would only be in a long range later on. My grandfather walked over to Thoreau Greenberg, slapped him across the face, and took my father and my uncle and went to his attorneys, Taylor and Lewis, I will never forget, and put the business in a receivership. That was the end of it. He would not continue in business with him. And that was one of the reasons, too, that my family went to New York. That was the end of the business.
Now, in Scranton, you know the names of the schools that you went to?
Yes. I went to the Colfax School.
That's elementary.
Elementary. High school was Central High School, which is still there. Probably one of the best high schools. Central High School at that time was only college prep. It was not the commercial high school. They had a separate commercial high school.
And you mentioned you went 1 year to college there.
Yeah. I went to Marywood. And while going to Marywood, I also went to the Powell School of Business because I wanted to learn shorthand and typing because I had felt that for what I wanted to do, that I would need it.
Now, what was that that you had decided you wanted to do?
Well, I had really wanted journalism.
In New York,
I went to Hunter, and I went to Columbia. Well, you see, when I went to New York, it became a whole different story. When I was in Scranton, there was an ad in the paper one day. Somebody wanted some part-time help. And I had been reading it. Yeah, we were kidding around. I said, no, I'm going to apply for that. It was the Airway Company. They wanted somebody like 3 or 4 afternoons a week. It was really to answer the telephone and stuff of that sort. And you can do your homework there, you know, and all that.
This was when you were in high school or college?
In college. And I decided that I would take it. It would be fine. You know, it was pin money. It was great. When we moved to New York, it was a national company, and they had recommended me to their office in New York. So I said to my family, I said, this is crazy. I can get a good job. And I can go to school, you know, night, Saturday classes and all. That's how it started.
What was the name of the company?
The Airway Company. I was only with them a year. When I answered a blind ad in the New York Times, as I say, journalism, I used to write quite well. And this was for somebody who could do mail, handle mail on their own. And it was with McFadden Publications. It was in the correspondence department of their accounting. And I eventually took over the export department. They were doing business with 57 countries. It's a very interesting thing. They used to sell those health books, those encyclopedias of health, like peanuts, to those countries who didn't know what
McFadden.
Those, all that health junk. And each country had its own way of writing. You know, its own stilt of fashion. I used to handle all the correspondence with that. And I was with him until I was married.
But you did that. You still finished college?
No, I never finished. I'll tell you why.
How long did you go then?
I went to college Saturdays nights. I must have gone 4 or 5 years. But you see, what happened was that I could no longer continue in journalism. I had to get some business skills. And one of the important things was credits and collections, which I was doing. And there was a National Credit and Collection Society, and we were part of the New York branch. So I had to get into those special courses all down the line. And I never had enough credits in any particular area, either in the humanities or in the commercial. And it just never bothered me. And Mike has always said to me, Mother, you know, I always think that someday you ought to go back and get a degree. And I always say to him, what's that?
Now, while we're talking about education, what about your religious education?
What's that?
Your religious education.
My religious education was, I went to Sunday school at the Y. Now you must understand, I graduated Sunday school. You went through a regular curriculum there, you know, through 8 grades. But there was no Hebrew taught. Well, this was not what my grandfather wanted.
Your grandfather could read Hebrew? Well, the prayer book Hebrew.
No. My uncle Harry was fluent in Hebrew. He could read, write, speak, you know, conversational Hebrew and all. My paternal grandfather as well. My maternal grandfather knew, you know, prayer book Hebrew. And he was fluent in Slavish and Hungarian. See, that he could read and write fluently. When I was about 10 or 11 years, must have been about 11 years old, they established a new synagogue in Scranton called Temple Israel. There had never been a conservative synagogue. And this was the first one. And we were living, when we bought these homes next to each other, we were like 5 minutes away. Now, my grandfather objected to our going there for services. He still wanted the family with him. But he did not object to the children going there for their education, because then it was a regular Hebrew school, you know, where our boys went. Because prior to that, you had to go to a cheder. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, with the cheders, they learn nothing. I would not go. Never would. They could never do a thing with me about going to that, because it was a typical old-time cheder. The teacher with this, I would not go. And let me tell you, when I didn't want to go, I didn't go. And it was the only thing my grandfather was very unhappy about was me. Then our boys went to the B'nai Israel. But the important thing was that when it was time for our boys to be bar mitzvah, my two older brothers were bar mitzvah in Scranton. The bar mitzvah had to be at the shul. Grandfather was, listen, he was, the mover of the building of it, and he was the revered, you know, older citizen.
But you went to the Sunday school at this new...
I only went to the Sunday school at the Y.
You did not go to
I
the...
I would not go to... I had no time. You see, by this time, I was in elocution. I was in debating. I was in the junior drama league. I had no time to go three times a week. So I finally hit a compromise with my grandfather. Mr. Gross, who was one of the elders, a teacher, Hebrew teacher, and I agreed we would meet twice a week for an hour, and he would teach me Hebrew privately so that I would be able to learn to read and write, you know, Hebrew. This was the compromise. I would not go. I didn't have the time. I really didn't. I was active in every... the why... I played basketball. I played on the Y league team. I was a member of the Y debating society. When I was 16, I represented the Y in the debating circle. See, they were part of a group. They had interrelationships with Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, you know, all those areas in there. And we were sent out. It was fantastic.
Now we're getting into your adolescent years and some of the things that you were interested in. You know, fun and what did you do for fun and recreation? That was fun.
The what? Tennis. Tennis was the most important thing. My Aunt Hannah was married to a man who had been captain of the tennis team at City College in New York. He was a New Yorker. And from the time they were married, we were playing tennis, but, you know, nothing great. We had marvelous tennis facilities in spring. We used to get up, I think I was about 11, and I can remember, my two older brothers, my father, my uncle, and I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, go to Nayoah Park, which was a public park where they had these...
This is in New York.
No, this is in Scranton. We used to play tennis.
What's the name of that park again?
Nayog Park. N-A-Y, capital A-U-G, Nayog Park. Then we had Weston Field, which was... Weston Field was the core of all of the recreational facilities of all the schools in Scranton. Weston, W-E-S-T-O-N.
Weston Field?
Weston Field. See, the schools in Scranton always had kindergartens. Then they had summer recreational facilities. Every schoolyard, there were big schoolyards there, had two teachers. They were skilled in arts and crafts. They would teach volleyball, tennis, they had the swings. And at the end of the summer season, they would have competition at Weston Field. See, there was a swimming pool there, and you could take the children there for their training. You could take them there for their tennis. But Weston Field was the core of all of the physical education.
That was only in the summer.
No, that went on all year long, but for the school facilities. But that was where everything took place, but the wind-up, the big festival at the end of the year.
In your youth there in Scranton, are you still friendly with any of the friends that you made then?
Oh, yes, still very friendly. My dearest friend was Frieda Gutermann. Her father was the dean of Orthodox rabbis in Western Pennsylvania. Rabbi Gutermann had the Lindenstrup Temple. Lindenstrup Temple was his. Frieda and I were very, very dear friends.
And she's still living there?
Yes, she lives in Binghamton, New York.
And tell me about your health. And you played tennis and did all these things. You had to be well.
It had to be well. I would overdue. You know, and then I was down for a couple of weeks from pure fatigue.
Yeah. I never had anything serious as a young girl. Can remember the health services of those days, the doctor or whatever.
Well, you had your own family doctor. Remember, Dr. Halpert was our doctor.
How do you spell that?
H-A-L-P-E-R-T. You went to his office and you sat forever.
So it hasn't changed.
My God, I will never forget that. But he used to make home calls with his nurse, Miss McDonald. His daughter, Pauline, was married to, Eisenberg, the musician. They've lived in Europe all their lives. They never came back here.
Now, can you tell us something about your husband? Have you met him?
Yes. I had gone to Scranton for Thanksgiving. See, I kept in very close touch with my Scranton friends. And there was a Thanksgiving dance one of the clubs. One of the boys I knew had been in New York a couple of weeks before, and he said, how about coming in for the Thanksgiving dance? I said, you know, I'm going to take a few days off, and I think I'll go out and visit with Aunt Hannah. And I went in on Sunday. And on Monday, my Aunt Anne called me and told me that she was having all the cousins for Thanksgiving dinner because, you know, we were all apart already. My cousin Louise Miller was living in Binghamton. In Binghamton she had
married. How come everybody seems to have gone to Binghamton?
Well, it's a very close place.
It's close.
It's very close. I still have another cousin who went to Binghamton. They're all over now. And she said she was going to have all the cousins for Thanksgiving, kids who were in college, you know, and all coming back. And on Wednesday, it started to snow. But really snow. Now, my husband had cousins who lived in Scranton. As a matter of fact, his mother's brother, his Uncle Herman, lived one block down from my grandfather, and he used to play pinochle with my grandfather.
Your husband's first name was?
Patterson Morris. P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N, but everybody called him Pat. His cousin lived in his Uncle Herman's daughter, Priscilla, was married and lived in a small area outside of Scranton, Duryea. Duryea is as far from Scranton as Duquesne is from, you know, another one of those little towns.
How do you spell Duryea?
D-U-R-Y-E-A. Now, Priscilla had invited Pat for the Thanksgiving holiday. And she had fixed him up with a girl that I knew very well. From Oliphant.
Mm-hmm.
Came the snow. And Pat was visiting his Uncle Herman and his Aunt Rose, and a cousin of his from, where did they live? Homesdale. Priscilla's brother and his wife from Homesdale had come in to see Pat, and they were all down at Uncle Herman's. And Pearson and his wife, Anne, were to go out to Duryea with Pat, and they were all supposed to go to the dance together. We were having an early dinner at Aunt Anne's, because she said she would have dinner at 2 o'clock so that everybody could get back home and get dressed in time for the dance that night. We just knew that this was going to be the snowstorm of the century. And at 5 o'clock that day, the dance was canceled. You could not get through. So they dropped me back down at Aunt Hannah's. And we were sitting and talking. And the doorbell rang. Now, I had gone to school with Pearson. And I was delighted to see him. And he comes in with his wife. And John, who knew my Uncle Harry. And Pearson said he had to stop and see something. He talked about some legal thing with Uncle Harry, and Pat says, I'll be very glad to go with you. You know, there's nothing else to do. And they walked, trudged up in the snow, which was just a block away, and we sat and we talked. Pearson said, after they had been there for about an hour, that he thought they better get back because they were going to stay with his wife's family, lived up in a little area, a little north of Scranton, and he hoped they'd be able to get through because of the snowdrift. So I had not really paid any attention to Pat because I was so glad to see Pearson. I hadn't seen him in a while. We're all busy talking. And he says, you go ahead, Pearson. I can walk back down to your father's place. He said, at least I can, you know, sit here and talk. So we did. And he stayed. And finally, my Uncle Harry excused himself, and my aunt and uncle excused themselves. And I am, you know, I'm at a point, you know, what do you do at this point? And finally he said, could you fix some coffee? And I said, yes. And my aunt was a fantastic cook, baked magnificently, and with coffee. And about 1:30, he said he was going back, but he said, could he see me the next day? I said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I've made other arrangements with my friends and all that. You know, I just didn't pay any attention to him. Now, the reason for it was this. He had been married. And I did not know until the next morning when my Uncle Harry explained to me he was in the process of getting a divorce from his wife. And that was why Priscilla and the family had it, that he had been down in the dumps about the whole deal. And they had asked him to come out. So I said to Uncle Harry, he said he wanted to see me today, but God, who needs this? The next morning he called me and told me that, you know, it had stopped snowing and they were plowing the roads. And he said Uncle Herman had lent him a car and he wanted to see Priscilla. Would I drive into Duryea to see Priscilla with him? There's no harm in that, you know, I'll do that. So we went. We went for lunch and we spent some time there. And we came back. And the next thing I knew, my aunt told me that he was staying for dinner. I said, you know, I said, well, you know, I told her what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to have a date that night with the boy who was to take me to the dance. Well, he didn't care. He was staying for dinner, and then he would go back down. It was always. Saturday, it started to snow again. And when I saw the snow coming down again, I knew I had a very important appointment Monday at my office at 10 o'clock. But I cannot risk waiting for Sunday to get out. I'm going to get out this afternoon. So Pat called me Saturday morning. Can we do something tonight? I said, I'm sorry. I am leaving for home. I have a very important appointment on Monday. And I just can't risk, you know, not getting home. So he said, call me back in a half hour. And he said, I'm going to make the same train with you. I said, to New York? What are you going to do in New York?